Yeah, I don't think that's the right thing to say. I want to see the baby.
Here we go. You know, I still can't believe we have to do this on the show. I didn't care when it was on our Instagram because we had like 9 followers on there. But remind me again why we have to let Bill run an ad on this show.
Well, he took over our Instagram and wouldn't give it back. We had to bring someone in to arbitrate, and he had a lot of very specific requirements before he'd give us our account back. Honestly, it was brilliant business strategy.
I regret it. We should have just let him have the account and made ourselves a new one. You know what? I regret everything.
I think you're being too hard on him. He saw an opportunity and he took it. And his Instagram has grown faster than ours. I don't see you succeeding as he has.
You're just saying that because he wrote the script and is so darn handsome. Ugh, I hate this so much.
Well, thank you, Jim. And on this, both you and my mother are agreed. Now then, I believe it is time to dive into the meat of the ad, or the tofu for our vegan listeners. Please now, please take your places, all of you.
There's just the two of us, and our places are in front of our mics, where we always are. You exhaust me, but I still love you like a brother.
Thank you again, Jim. All right, now let's go, and action.
Kill Ben Balor, Nizarun, Kill Anarag, Killin Zaram, Balin Tesafir.
They have taken the bridge and the second hall. We have barred the gates, but we cannot hold them for long. The ground shakes. Drums. Drums in the deep. We cannot get out. A shadow moves in the dark.
What's this arrow sticking out of the armor on this well?
We cannot get out. They are coming.
Sorry.
Fool of a Took! Throw yourself in there next time and rid us of your stupidity!
Now there, little fellow. If I had a nickel for every time a gray-haired wizard called me a fool, well, my pallet business would have been far more successful. Let us just say that.
Well, I imagine I deserved it. I really should have been more careful.
Who in the name of Saruman's nose hair are you? How did you get here? Are you an orc?
Oh, hello. I am Bill Hasinger, former owner of Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot, and current owner of Bill Hasinger's Social Media Life Coaching, LLC.
Be gone with your nonsense! They are coming! We must bar the door! Prepare for battle!
Actually, my new friend, Mr. Dumbledore, I believe you'll find it is not the Dementors at all, but the stereo system I brought with me for my presentation to young Piper here. I thought it would be rhetorically beneficial to have percussive accompaniment. In a minute.
What are you even saying? You speak as a madman!
Now, there's no need to take that to... Oh dear. It seems our adversary has found the speakers I had positioned outside our door. You gentlemen may wish to take your positions now. I suggest putting the house elf up high so he can use his crossbow as they enter.
All the foolish beings in the lands of Middle-earth.
Now then, where was I? Yes, what I can offer you free of charge through my social media presence and such.
Now doesn't exactly seem like a good time. I should take my sword and help my friends.
In actuality, you are incorrect, my vertically challenged companion. Your elderly bearded leader has said harsh things to you, and you should in no wise risk your life protecting his.
I guess that makes sense.
Indeed, he does not care about you. To him, you are no one. But not to me. I believe you'll find my Instagram to be quite compelling. While many Instagram accounts have strengths in aesthetics, and many others have strengths in their poetic prose, and yet many others deliver solid and practical advice, I believe you will find that mine at bill.hasinger is one that provides all of these things in greater abundance than you'll find anywhere else on Instagrams. I put great effort into making certain that all of my posts entertain and better you for maximum self-improvement and enjoyment. Indeed, I am not like so many fly-by-night shysters whose primary goal is to use their influence to get you to buy Nike products and whatnot. I care deeply about each of my followers and make a point to count them as often as I can spare. Many people never find their calling. They go from job to job, causing problems, bumping into things, inviting attacks from goblins and other mythical creatures because they are not yet doing the thing to which they are called. But when a man finds his calling, when he really discovers the thing for which he was created to do, it truly is a beautiful thing. And I, who stand before you am such, a beautiful thing, gaze upon me and follow me, for I...
Blasted fool!
With my last dying breath, I offer you the best thing I do. Won't you follow me? Won't you? Won't you improve your life as I lose mine? Won't you?
The podcast you are about to hear contains the histrionic and problematic conversations of a stodgy Presbyterian and a casserole-loving Baptist. Their interactions are volatile at times and unpleasant most of the time. In many nations, this is considered a mild form of torture. We strongly advise you to stop this nonsense and go do something useful with your life. Otherwise, if you insist on listening to this mess, welcome to the lightest form of flogging.
Thank you, Deep Voice Man. I also welcome you to the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast, episode 81. I am your gainfully employed host, Jim, and sitting across the country from me at a contractually negotiated 804 miles is my co-host, David, who, if he were the Presbyterian extreme, and Ben Robin is the Baptist extreme, then I am the lonely exclusive middle. Now then, David, hey, welcome to the show. We're here. We're in it. We're Yes, yes.
Hey, show.
Very.
No, wait. Hey, show comes after the music, right?
Good point. No, it's before.
Yeah. Wait, is this a show?
I don't plan on ever saying that. Sometimes I just say it. And yeah, we are. This is practice, David. We're going back in time.
Oh, we're talking about practice.
We're talking about...
Not a show.
We're talking about practice. You know... Well, we're just talking about practice. We're not even talking about a game. No, we're talking about a show. Hey, show. And...
There it is.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. Beautiful. I'm proud of you.
Hey!
All right.
Proud of you.
Okay. So let's go into our follow-up. Looks like all of the follow-up is from you. So I'm just going to sit and listen. And
Jim doesn't really do anything for the show anymore.
Come on. I do lots of things for this show.
That's true. He edits and he goes to work.
I go to work. Well, lately, David, I've just been a little kerfuffle.
I know. I do totally understand.
But as Barbra Streisand says in New York, I'm a little verklempt. So that's I laugh at my own impressions now. This is where we're at. I have not found like a life rhythm. I don't know, for the lack of a
right.
And I don't know how to get this show planned properly like I have been up until episode 79. So we're going to get there. We're going to get there. But I think last show I did okay for not having prepared at all.
I thought you did great for not having prepared at all. I kind of liked, there were aspects of it that I liked because at no point did either of us go on. I just felt like it was more back and forth.
Really? Are you sure? Because
maybe
there was more, you said there was more back and forth.
Well, it felt more back and forth. It may be the case that one of us talked more, but it just felt more, it felt less like we were each like reading the thoughts that we had prepared.
Okay. I can see that. I can see that. I guess we have done that up until now. I think we've had some good shows in the past with notes back and forth, but we'll just kind of see how this goes then. Cause this is the show you want, isn't it? Right.
This is the show. Yeah. The one where Jim doesn't prepare.
That we don't prepare, that we just kind of wing it, which is weird that you want that and I don't.
I know we've talked about this.
Yeah. This is just weird, but
on like episode 3.
Yeah. I do want us to still have show notes, but we need to not bore the listeners with our inside baseball. Let us start with a follow-up. David, begin.
All right. Last week, you said that there was something wrong with Charlie's health and that he would fall down at my door. That seemed insensitive, but I actually don't know what's wrong with his health. So what is it?
David. No, there is, I don't know if I'm in trouble or not for this, but I know a couple of years ago, I read that he was going through a health issue that gave him lots of pain, chronic pain.
Oh.
From writing. I think it was isolated to his hands. This is like so meta. This is how you and I do follow-up. We insert things in follow-up that guarantees follow-up. So it's like the gift that keeps on giving. And that's just what we did.
Right.
I said something that just guarantees that one of our Slack listeners will just chime in from the mist and says, Jim, this is the health issue. You're really insensitive. Or I'll look it up. But either way, David, next week we will actually find out what Tim Challey's health issue is, his terminal illness in his hands, that Tim Challey's hand illness.
title.
It's a terminal hand illness. Yes, good title. then all will be right, because we have screwed with Michael J. Fox, I think, Kevin DeYoung,
Wayne Grudem.
We seem to have fun with our celebrity pastors or celebrity bloggers in our follow-up sections.
Yeah, like Michael J. Fox, the celebrity pastor.
Yes.
I think he actually is in the PCA now.
Hey-o! He's up there shaking from that pulpit.
He replaced Tim Keller.
Replaced him. No, Dave was like, no, really, please. Just couldn't get any worse or better. Or could get better. No. So we'll take care of that next week. What's up next?
Next up is, I'm wondering, because you slotted a thing into the show music.
Yeah, I was sneaky. I was a little sneaky. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. I was just wondering, actually, this is an open question for Slack. Did anyone miss the German reformer bit that Jim did? It was a good bit. But it occurred to me that if people are accustomed to skipping the music, they might have actually skipped that by accident.
I would recommend people not skip the music, because it's not that long. It's not that long.
No, I know. I was going to skip it because on Tuesdays when I listen to the show, I'm just trying to like kind of have it fresh in my mind so I can do follow up and everything. And I started to skip it. And I was like, oh, no, wait, there's this thing. And then I skipped it anyway because I knew it wasn't going to generate any follow up. Except for the follow-up that we're currently doing.
Yes, thank you. No, I mean, I figured people wouldn't because depending on how long the bit is, it would be, you know, I think they'll notice it either way. I don't know how, if they fast forward through it or not.
Yeah, I think
they'll probably notice it and then they'll go back and listen to it. But I guess we should say from now on, I don't know if we'll do it every week, but I am going to be putting some past bit favorites
or present bit favorites
in that music.
Probably not future, because those aren't ready yet.
Just for fun. Just because, you know, our past, there's a lot of bits that you and I have done. And there's not really, there aren't any really great ways for us to feature those. You know, I don't want them.
Yeah, we have at least two bites worth
of the bits. So we're going to be, it's like, you know, playing some greatest hits, you know. We'll be right. rolling the deep cuts of the lightest form of flogging podcast. We're going to be featuring in the music break. So folks, do endeavor to listen to the music break. There may be an old favorite of yours, an old chestnut of the lightest form of flogging for your ear enjoyment.
Yeah, I mean, if you skip it, you could have had it all rolling in the deep cuts.
Rolling in the deep. Ah, so there you go.
You had the bit inside the music and we played it. We played it to the beat.
Yeah, we did.
Let's see here. It is the woman who, there's follow-up on the follow-up here. The woman who sanctifies her husband is in 1 Corinthians 7, not 13. And Ben, I think he meant the woman who saves her husband is in 1 Corinthians 7, not 13. I made reference to this verse. I thought it was in 1 Corinthians 13. That's the love chapter, which is distinct from the marriage chapter, which is 1 Corinthians 7. And there's something deeply ironic about those being separate.
I get you. Are you saying that there is not in 1 Corinthians 7 a woman who sanctifies her husband?
I was referring to the woman who may save her husband in 1 Corinthians 7.
Okay. All right. So... this is so many things we get wrong. Okay, well, thank you. Can we not review that next week? I just want that one to be done with.
Okay. Next up was, Jim, you were struggling to remember the phrase, if you keep a close watch on yourself and your teaching, you will save yourself and your hearers. That's 1 Timothy 4:16. You actually were like really close, but Ben likes to be in follow-up, so here we are. Next up from Ben again is that Ben did not get on to David for saying that baptism now saves or being deliberately provocative. Ben got on to Presbyterians more generally for being unclear in what both in what we both agree, scripture does not mean sometimes deliberately. And then next up, I made reference to either Matthew 1 or 2. This really doesn't need to be in because I said it was 1 or 2, and it was Matthew 1, where the scriptures say that Jesus will save his people from their sins, but that is Matthew 1:21 if you were looking for a specific reference. Next up is a David Church update.
Have they recognized your Presbyterianism yet? Or are you still kind of in the shadows?
Oh, we're still in the shadows, but I just wanted to report that this is the beautiful thing about being in a like capital R Sabbatarian Reformed Church or Sabbatarian.
Yeah, we're full on. Never go full Presbyterian. Well, David did.
Right. And so on Sunday, I left the house at 9 a.m. Now our church is 45 minutes away. Left the house at 9 a.m. We had the church service and then we had Sunday school and then we had a potluck. And then we stood around discussing theology for what must have been about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Then we had Bible study. And then we hung out there for, I don't know, maybe an hour or two after Bible study and had dinner. And then we came home. We did not get home until 9:30 p.m. And it was wonderful.
That was wonderful. Sounds exhausting.
It was both exhausting and also like...
Is a Sunday Sabbath rest supposed to be that activity filled? I mean, are you allowed to
have to be.
Go to church and then go home and spend the rest of the day at home? Would you be in violation if you did that?
No, it doesn't have to be. But when, I don't know, we just really enjoyed it because we got to talk to people that like, I don't know, there's something about being able to talk to people who are like really like-minded. I'm sure that like, as time goes on, we won't do that every week. But the church provides the opportunity to do that if you want to. And next week we'll probably do something similar. It's also, I mean, you can take like an hour and a half out of that time from 9 to 9:30 if you drop our travel for whatever it's worth. And that's part of why we're spending the whole day out there is because we don't want to have to drive 3 hours to be able to go to the evening service or whatever.
Is that something that you be able to sustain over the many following Sundays? I mean, is that just going to be can that be like a routine for you since you can't really drive home?
We're kind of hoping that it can. It's kind of interesting because it's definitely exhausting, but it's also like something that I really do enjoy and want to do, which is like, it's not like I'm being a legalist and thinking that I need to do this. Like we've had Sundays where we've just gone home and it was Sundays where we've even skipped the evening service at this point, because it's just such a far drive and everything. But like, I really do want to do this and it's weird because it's people. But it's very, edifying. Like the whole day is just edifying.
We all knew this was going to happen. David, we all knew this was going to happen because when you finally got back to your people, well, not, I shouldn't say back, when you finally got to your people, it was in a church with like-minded people who believed what you believe and you didn't have to be in so much conflict all the time.
I wasn't very frequently in conflict. I just would very frequently have to avoid conflict.
Okay. Well, you say potato, I say potatoes. Yeah. I think we all knew this was going to be a huge thing for you and you were going to come out of your shell and just, you know, be when you're with your people, everything's better. Because you were spending so much time, like 9 years in a church that was not always aligned with you. This is all obvious, I think, to all of us that you're just kind of having a good old time in this new land of Colorado. And I think this is good. I was hoping for this. And we got it. So now here you are.
All right.
You're going to be more David than you usually are.
Next up is, I just thought it was ironic that the past week, 2 weeks, and this week included, I've been training a new employee on tons of things, which has also been very exhausting because that is like just a lot of phone calls and screen sharing sessions and talking to a person, which I'm not used to during the day. It really hasn't been that bad. Like I really like the guy. He's catching on quick, but it's just, you know, people. But I wanted to say that Jim is on the other side, the exact other side of this going through training. So we're both like coming home exhausted. Well, coming home, whatever. Ending the day of work exhausted because of training in general.
Yeah. It's physical exhaustion is not the deal here. It's just mental exhaustion, maybe a little bit. People exhaustion, emotional exhaustion, but that can just take it out of you. I mean, I've been drinking from a fire hose for 2.5 weeks
Yeah, you told me about the bourbon last week.
Put strain on the neck when you have to put your head into a stream of a fire hose. But it's getting better. It's getting better.
You can hold the hose.
I guess so. That'll make it better. Whoa. No.
Well, you don't have to bend over. It's better for your posture.
Okay. Good to know. All right.
And last up is I've joined TikTok. I am now a TikToker. Not generationally speaking. Trying to help promote Relight. Well, it's just really easy right now to get a following on there. So I'll be doing videos where I make fun of various theological groups like Baptists. I'll be doing videos where I just literally just walk on camera, sit down, sip some scotch, and read out loud the Westminster Shorter Catechism. Actually, my plan is to do the Westminster Shorter Catechism with scotch. I'll probably do the Heidelberg with wine, and then I'll do Keach's Catechism, the Baptist Catechism, with some hot tea.
Thank you. And the metaphor should be apparent to you. Okay, well, that's great. I can't wait to not watch that. Is TikTok like... is it Snapchat? Is it like Snapchat where it's video?
No, it's much more like Vine.
Much like a Vine? Okay. Boy, I have just discovered Vines. I discover things about 10 years after they... About 10 years after
they're dead.
After Vines left the scene, I now discover them. And just, it's like a whole new world. I'm like...
I'm going to have to send you some GeoCities.
I remember those. I'm old enough to remember those. Me and Chris Ragsdale are old enough to remember lots of things from the good old days. Yeah, great. Well, speaking of GeoCities, we have a topic to get to, and it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah,
so first, we're going to take a quick music break. And when we get back, we'll jump into the law of the exclusive middle. And David's going to talk, and I'm not going to. Here we go.
So you want the music now?
Yes, I'll put it in.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid.
Hold on. We have to stop the music. Stop the music, Jim. Jim, you're editing right now. Stop it. I forgot to mention some housekeeping items. Folks, our Slack people have just now stopped arguing about our Charismania episode a couple weeks ago. And if you also want to join in on the fun and criticize me, David, how could they do that?
If you would like to criticize Jim, you can do that by going to slack.techreformation.com. There you will need to enter an email address and a password, and you will be sent an invite to the URL, which is actually techreformation.slack.com. You go to slack.techreformation.com to register, and then you go to techreformation.slack.com to use the Slack. And in there, you will find the flogging channel.
Awesome. Thank you, David.
That's it.
That's all you get. You'll find the flogging channel. And then once you see it, go ahead and erase your Slack account. Okay, folks, if you would like to call in and make a case for the cessation of the temple, speak in Baptist tongues, or silently accuse us, call our show at 707-998-8547 or 707-99-TULIP and leave us a voicemail. Call us, won't you? We are ready to believe you. And now, David, we can continue on with our music break, play a little bit for fun for the kids, and we'll get into our main topic.
Right.
Does that sound agreeable to you?
Over sideways.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I don't want to see what you do sideways. Here we go.
Are you a Southern Baptist who wants the hipster new Calvinist lifestyle without all the negative consequences? Did you grow up in a fundamentalist household and now want to live a little on the razor blade edge of life, yet stay grounded? Do you want to appear cultured and impress your atheist friends? Are you locked into a covenant agreement with a seminary? Are you a legalist and want to stay that way? Well, look no further, because we have a solution. From the creators of the popular video filtering service VidAngel comes the new smash hit sweeping the nation, BoozeAngel. BoozeAngel is the nation's first mail order service for alcohol-free liquor, wine, and beer. Just go to www.thisisnotactuallyrealsopleasedontsueusbutifyousuedavid.com, make your selection from our long list of popular booze brands, and we will send you these selections stripped of all the alcohol via our proprietary process. You don't have to drink in your basement anymore. Get out and drink in the open like a decent Calvinist should. Sign that covenant agreement with a bottle of Keystone Light and a smile. Live for the first time in your life with hope. Available from BoozeAngel. Booze Angel is not real, so don't bother. Either drink or don't. I don't care, so stop bugging me, will ya? I'm drinking a vodka cranberry just like John Calvin did, and I don't want your legalism, you dig? That was harsh. Welch's grape juice will do just fine. It's all good in the hood. Come here, give me a hug. And now, back to the show.
We're back. David, let's go into our main topic. Today we are continuing an ongoing discussion on persuasion. We're talking about people. We're talking about people and how they speak to each other and how they argue with each other and how they try to persuade each other. And I'm going to go ahead and let David take the reins on this. And it's a pretty interesting topic. We teased it last episode, as they say, and we're going to go ahead and jump in both feet in the pool, the kiddie pool. Both feet, we'll dangle them, we'll splash each other, and then we'll leave. All right.
Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide?
Okay, what's that from?
Oh, the song.
Okay, all right.
Still going.
You still got that song in your head, Dave?
Over, sideways, and under on a magic carpet ride. And that's when they're doing the twirls in the clouds.
And then he does some somersaults.
All right. So the concept here for our topic, I'm calling it the law of the exclusive middle. You've heard of the law of the excluded middle. I'm making up a new fallacy, which is a fallacy in itself, the law of not making up fallacies. The concept here is that when there are two extremes, there is a certain psychological appeal to being the gentleman who has chosen the middle road and left all the zealots by the waysides.
Oh yeah, this is a big one. I mean, and by the way, I mean, is there like a...
You fought me on this last week.
I did?
Yeah.
In what way?
You were like, I don't know if that's a thing.
No. It was a context.
Said it just like that.
I don't know if that's a thing, David. I don't think it's fair to say it that way. It was probably within a particular specific context. In general, I mean, how could I not say that this is true? I can't. I mean,
that's
this
true.
Is, this is, thank you. no, I see this everywhere. And I'm going to try and contribute as best I can to it. But is there, like a term for this, or is this like another one of your, invented phrases that you've been doing very
well? Oh, I have no idea.
I'm not criticizing, but Observational Logical Fallacies by David McCookie. It's a book you're going to write. This is cool. I think this is definitely something that I think everybody can kind of see. Anyways, continue onward, David, upward and onward.
So I have a few examples here, but at the outset, I just want to state that my examples are not like, I'm going to use an example of charismatics. I'm going to use examples of Arminians. And my examples are not set out to show that, oh, this is why those people believe this. Like this fallacy is why they believe it. And therefore they're wrong. That's not the point of this. The point of this is to show that for some of these positions, there are more reasons to believe the thing than just the strength of the arguments for it. And the more reasons here is the law of the exclusive middle. So to show my bona fides, which I think is still legal to do on the air, I am going to start with one of my own positions.
Honey, look at this Google search.
Wow, that's a really slender man.
I wish more people picked up on that. That was like the funniest little interaction you and I have had in a while. Don't look up Slender Men, David. That would be wrong. Just look up Slenderman.
Actually, at lunch on Sunday, a guy moved a little bit to make sure that I had room. He was like, do you have enough room there? I said, oh yeah, I'm a slender fellow. And he goes, yeah, I hadn't noticed. I didn't know what to say.
Then he got up and left. You never saw him again.
So, my political views, there is a certain appeal to my political views for me, because I do not identify as being a Democrat or a Republican, left wing or right wing. I'm able to criticize both sides and I'm able to dodge the criticisms of both sides. So like,
so you're not of either camp or,
exactly. I'm able to look over at the leftists and say, oh, they don't know how to think more than one step ahead in terms of problem solving. And then I'm able to go over to the conservative people and say that like, it just seems like they don't care about people. Like the problems that the liberals bring up are often real problems that really do need to be dealt with. Maybe not by the government, maybe by different means, but conservatives never talk about solutions to the problem. They very frequently just talk about how bad the liberals are.
Yeah, and all while ignoring the fact that maybe it's wrong. We're not going to get into this today, but maybe it's wrongly articulated, wrongly stated, but the left is pointing out real suffering.
Exactly. In any case, what I was going to say was the example of this that I like to think of was when Trump came in and shut down Obamacare. Like there were real people who came into like who had serious medical conditions, who signed up for Obamacare, who then had their insurance taken away from them. And if Obama hadn't set that up, they would have been with a different insurance company and nothing would have happened. It's also partly his fault for doing this through executive order and all that. But when Trump removed it, when he got rid of it, now all those people have pre-existing conditions and their insurance rates went up.
So the political tug of war, there were people in the middle getting hurt by this.
Right.
And
it's often the people that the liberals are talking about.
Right, right, yeah. So I don't want to anger our conservative listeners. that'll be coming.
But that's the thing is I can anger both sides. I'm good at this. And there's something appealing about being in that position. And then the other side is that my political views are so out of, I was going to say left field and I was going to say right field. They're so out of a field that nobody's really heard of them. So nobody knows how to critique me. Like you won't find like the guy who rails against Covenanters on his blog every week.
True. So true. I remember one time you shared an article about, what was it? It was Denethor or something. Can you help me with that?
I think you might actually be thinking of, because that's about the regular principle. I think you're thinking of voting for false gods or how we ended up here.
Yeah, and I kind of knew that about you already, that your political views were like transcendent, like transcended the left and right thing. So like if you did unleash the behind the curtain, what was behind the curtain, people wouldn't know what to do with you. And I think that's exactly what happened. And it was like pretty kind of fun to watch because like there are some things you have said to me in the past that I have no clue how to converse with because I have like never heard of them before. I have no categories. I have no words. I don't know the language. And it's like probably fun for you just to sit and watch and laugh.
It is. That's the thing. Like I can, while conservatives fight liberals, I can just sit here and drink my long Long Island iced tea out of a straw. And like, it's like, you know, it's like sitting back in Geneva and watching World War II and I'm neutral. So it's fine. Except I'm not really neutral. Like I do have a dog in this fight.
Cause you're not in the middle. You're right. You're not taking, you know, something from the left and something from the right and saying guys and gals and those who identify as either, let's just meet in the middle here. And kind of figure this out because you're not even in there. I think a lot of people approach political fights this way and see the most vocal voices in the debate as being extreme left and extreme right and just kind of find the middle and say that that's the best.
Another one I have here is the 4-point Calvinist. And I didn't elaborate much on this in the notes, but my thought with this was it's basically an Arminian who wants to make the Calvinists happy by saying, oh, well, I agree with these things. But then also wants to hold his Arminian views. And really, the position, ironically, is not any different from your typical Arminian. Like, all Arminians are probably 4-point Calvinists if they really sit down and think about it.
And, you know, like a John Wesley were to show up and articulate his views, leaving some of the weird ones out, I mean, it would, like, be reminiscent of what a 4-point Calvinist is trying to say?
Yeah, I think so. I can't speak to Jacob Arminius himself. But yeah, well, and what's funny is they always pick a fight with the L, limited atonement, when really like
it's a controversial point of them all, if you ask me. But
exactly. Yeah. It, really, what they should be upset about is probably either the U or the I, unconditional election, that their choices don't affect their election, or that everybody that God draws will come to him. Those are the points that they should be picking fights with. And then they should be 3-point Calvinists. But that's kind of my point is like, if you say you're a 4-point Calvinist, like you're able to like rhetorically reside in the middle.
Yeah. It's, I don't know if that's the attempt. But that's sure what it looks like, and might be, it might, that intent might be held in good faith. I don't know, but it's ironic because 4-point Calvinists, like, I think, don't make anybody happy.
It's true.
I don't think they please them too much, and I don't, they sure certainly don't please Calvinists, because Calvinists say, just, you know, you're almost there, and you're just refusing to take the last step. And I'm curious as to why, and I'm suspicious as to why. Who are, what, like, what side are you trying to play? Just suspicion abounds with four. I mean, I don't know. I haven't. They're called Emeraldians. Is that what it is? 4-point Calvinists. What? Emeraldians. Isn't that like?
I don't know.
Wow, that's rare. Well, take care. I'll educate you and follow up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wish you would, Jim.
I wish you would contribute to this show. But yeah, I always think of this in terms of the political aspect of it, because so many people seek the middle just to calm everyone around them. But it's okay. I guess it's okay to take extreme views. But anyways, next up on the list,
I've given two examples. I want one from Jim, James Montgomery Briggs.
I think a claim of independence, politically speaking, is what I think of here. You ever heard of the red Republicans, the blue Democrats, and then there's just this huge swath of the swath. There's this huge purple area in the country. You ever heard of this? They're the moderates. They've called them the purple group. So there's red and blue, and that's all people think about. But then there's like this huge, huge swath of purple. And there was probably more like 5 years ago, I saw a book about the purple people, the moderates. Most of the people, the majority of people are moderates who are just wishing the loudest voices just to shut up. And it became like, it became appealing. And like you said, psychologically appealing to be in the purple, because you feel like you don't have to hurt anybody. You don't have to carry water for anybody. It's like this area where you don't really stand for much. You're mostly quiet by nature of being a purple political person. And that's the place where you should go. And yes, I think that is psychologically appealing. But I think that the more aggressive independent is the way to go. I think you could classify yourself as an independent, like truly so. You're not independent.
Well, yeah, I don't even vote.
Yeah, you're in another category.
That's pretty independent.
Yeah, yeah. But you're not in the middle. You're not a purple political person. You're in a different category. I think you're independent on purpose, not because you're just resigned to it. And I'm not giving a specific example, but that's kind of like a paradigm that I thought of when thinking about this. Is politically speaking, it's desirable and encouraged to go to the purple part, to the purple middle, but I don't think the psychological appeal is worth where you stand, because I'm okay with people arguing strongly for their views, politically speaking. I think it's possible to be a hardcore Republican but not carry water for them. I'm personally not there, but I'm okay with those voices. And being in the purple area is you're in danger of not really standing for much. You're like, you're forced to be quiet on a lot of these things. And that's what it is to be a good moderate, is to not really say much of anything and not direct attention to yourself. I don't know if that's where I want to be, but that's kind of what I thought of for this, politically speaking. I think it's a desire on a lot of people.
So I'm going to bring another one up here, and it's going to make you angry. So just chill.
You know, sometimes, David, I think that you do these things just to like poke at the people you don't like.
That's why I have the show.
I know that's, we have to give you some sort of outlet. But
you're that man.
I survived the Charismania episode, which I realized, by the way, you did defend me at one point and I didn't even realize it. So I'm sorry.
I told you that you had a bunch of cruft in your corner, so I couldn't stand there, but I tried.
Yeah. But if I could take that, I could take whatever you have to throw at me. So just go for it.
No, but again, the preface that I applied here, that I'm not trying to make the case that this is why Reformed Charismatics are Reformed Charismatics, or Charismatics with a seatbelt are Charismatics with a seatbelt. But Pentecostals accuse cessationists of being deists,
and cessationists accuse Pentecostals of being wacky and irreverent. And there is a certain appeal to taking the charismatic with a seatbelt road. It lets you excuse yourself from flack on both sides, and it also keeps you away from the crazies on both sides. This was something I was thinking about when you were talking about the middle and how you kind of just get to be quiet. Like, there are crazies on either side of a lot of positions, not just people who hold the position fully, like somebody who really holds the reform, the regulative principle of worship, but like people who are real jerks about the regulative principle of worship and people who are real jerks about the normative principle of worship. And in general, like, the people in the middle of the road don't have that reputation often because they don't care about anything. They took the middle of the road position.
I that might be a little extreme, saying they don't care about anything, but
not everybody who takes the middle road doesn't care about anything, but for somebody who doesn't care about anything, they're most likely to end up in the middle of the road position.
Yeah. And they most likely will probably categorize themselves as a charismatic with the seatbelt. I mean, that,
right,
that phrase I think is like a resignation for some, like, like, I think for some, it's like, I don't get what's going on. I think there's lots of crazy charismatics and they do a lot of things that ruin the reputation of charismatics. But like these cessationists, they have like a lot of really good points. So I am just going to just, I'm just going to call myself a charismatic with the seatbelt. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to really do much to change where I am because I feel like it's safe. And that's what it is. Charismatic with the seatbelt is safe. It's the I think that's the primary, that's the primary desire of someone using that phrase. But with that being said, David, I'm going to push back slightly and say that the Bible dictates seatbelts that need to be worn for, I believe, charismatics.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my point, is that it's not just because of the Bible. There's also the psychological element. But obviously, I mean, every side in this debate thinks they have the Bible.
Right, right. And okay, yeah. I want to fight you, but I don't want to. So, but yeah. So I don't think the seatbelt is always psychological salve. I think it can be. Some people smarter than I can genuinely articulate that the seatbelt comes from Scripture, and I think it's articulated well. And that's just, you know, that's just my opinion. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. I've used this in that way. I've used it as like just a way to like get away from everyone. that felt fine. Is that like the most like stinging thing you have for me today? Cause that felt good.
I don't know. Do you want to talk about baptism?
Sure. Let's do it. I don't know if it's just you and me, David, I don't really feel like I don't feel that fired up anymore.
So you just made a Ben.
It was Ben. I think it was. No, it was Ben. You're great. You're fine. I love you. You were awesome. I hope we talk to you again someday.
Maybe an analogy that would be helpful here is like the law of the exclusive middle is the cherry on top of the argument, where like in this case, charismatic with a seatbelt, the psychological idea of not being with the crazies on either side is like a cherry on top. Like, you've got your biblical argument. That's your main reason for believing it. And it's the cherry on top that like, oh, and it's really nice that I have these other things. But there are definitely people who exist in the world, not just on this issue, but on all kinds of issues, like the political things that you were talking about, where the cherry on top is the main thing. Like, that all they want is the cherry on top, and they will take the purple if it comes with the cherry. They'll take the charismatic with the seatbelt if it comes with the cherry. Like, if I can avoid conflict, I'm not saying there are a lot of these people, but to varying degrees, people care about the cherry on top or not.
I'm not quite following you. Can you just define real quickly what that cherry on the top is? Like, what is it?
The psychological and rhetorical persuasiveness of knowing that you're not on either of the extremes.
Okay. I think I got you.
All right. So I guess we can talk a little bit more about what the appeal here actually is, because I have a bunch of notes on that. The appeal here is, it's not as though for a lot of people when they come into the middle of the road position, it's not like they didn't have experience with either positions before and needed to make a decision. It, if you're a new believer and you've never heard about Calvinism or Arminianism before, somebody teaches you,
Okay, keep talking.
Bye, Jim.
I'm not leaving. I just need to take notes because I think of things and then I forget them. So just keep going.
If if you are a new believer, you've never had to deal with Calvinism, you've never had to deal with Arminianism, and somebody leads you to Christ and they say, okay, now you've got to start picking some positions. Here's two books. One's on Calvinism, one's on Arminianism. You've got to decide which one you're going to be. Like, this never happens. I'm sure it happens somewhere. Like, there's some crazy guy out there who does that. But somebody, you know, that
kind of did, David. Do you remember the book, Why I Am Not a Calvinist and Why I Am Not an Arminian? Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah, those exist. But for most, like, most of the people who are reading those have been a Calvinist or an Arminian for years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I got it.
Like, most people don't come into a lot of these things without baggage, I guess, narrative baggage. And one of the things that I think is appealing, like especially appealing about this, is what I like to call the turns out fallacy. And I borrow this from Merlin Mann. I realize we're doing a fallacy inside of a fallacy. It's fallacyception. But so the turns out fallacy is the idea that people really like stories that have an ending that goes, turns out. So the story I have here is, I was so sure of my views on free will were correct until I started to read Sproul's book and study the scripture. And it turns out Calvin was right. Like, that's a more rhetorically persuasive narrative than, I was raised a Calvinist. I read some stuff by Arminians, but I found fault with all of it, and I'm still a Calvinist.
Okay.
The former has like a rhetorical like pull to it. Like, you want to be with that guy because he came through this battle and
has been on a journey and found a secret and now knows where exactly that secret is and wants to tell everyone else where the secret is located. I think you're right. There is great rhetorical persuasion here.
And so for a lot of these stories where you go, like I know a lot of people who grew up crazy Pentecostal and then became a cessationist and then realized like, no, that's not what I want. And then came to the position of, you know, charismatic with a seatbelt. And I think that's kind of a turns out double whammy because you have a turns out inside of a turns out. So I thought I was A and I was really convinced. And then I realized there were problems with A. So I investigated and I found out about C, and C made a lot more sense. So I took that, but I still struggled with aspects of it. And then one day some guy at church showed me a book on position B, and B just makes sense. Like, it had none of the problems of A. It had none of the problems of C. Like, B just works.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out what you're precisely criticizing, because on the one hand, there's rhetorically describing what happens when one grows up crazy Pentecostal, becomes a cessationist, and then finds the charismatic with the seatbelt. As it turns out, that's the proper position. I'm trying to figure out what precisely you're criticizing. Someone that uses that as a persuasive device, or when it actually happens?
I'm not really trying to criticize anything. I'm just saying that there's something that feels good about knowing you examined both options, you lived through them, and you landed in the middle. You landed on something that you don't see as having any of the problems of the two positions you used to hold.
So what happens when that happens, though? Like, when someone does grow up a crazy Pentecostal, then becomes a Presbyterian, Scottish kilt-wearing, give me Scotland or I die cessationist, and then ends up somewhere else in neither of those places. Like, can you genuinely come to the middle? Not that charismatic with a seatbelt is in the middle. Well, actually, it kind of is, but
I'd want to argue that in the middle is the pendulum here is from, like, Pentecostal to John MacArthur, and then in the middle to Matt Chandler.
Okay. And that is an improper, less desirable path then?
No. I'm saying that it is appealing. Like, it's emotionally appealing that again, regardless of, like, I'm not trying to make a case for cessationism or for charismania or for the middle of the road position. I'm trying to use this as an example. What's that?
I gotcha. I'm getting it. You know what that was? That was like David getting annoyed. What's that, Jim? What's that?
No, I just, you keep cutting out.
Jim, no, go ahead, finish, Jim. Go ahead. What's that? What's up, Jim? What's up? No, I'm you've categorized this as a fallacy. So I'm like, you know, when someone thinks fallacy, they think, oh no, red flag, something's going wrong. Someone messed up the logic here and is doing something wrong. So
right.
I'm kind of thinking about that. I'm like trying to figure out, like, someone who goes through that path, what is it about that path that's wrong? And you're not saying that.
No. I'm saying that it's a feels good reason to believe the thing. Like fallacies prove things that are true all the time. Like you can get to the right conclusion for the wrong reasons all the time.
Yeah, red herrings. The thing that you mentioned as the red herring can be a true thing, but it's just the what you're trying to accomplish is wrong. Okay, I guess I'm thinking about the fallacy and trying to figure. Maybe a fallacy is not the right word to use.
No. So what I mean, actually, not just the red herring thing, but like if I pick a fallacy, Jim.
Let's do post hoc ergo proctor hoc. After this, therefore, because of this.
Right. So if I say I know that this is kind of an interesting case. I know that the Bible is true because the Bible says it's true. That doesn't, the fact that that's a fallacious argument, although I'm not sure that it does in the case of ultimate foundations for reason. So that's why I was hesitant to use it. But the fact that that is an argument that begs the question, doesn't mean that scripture is false. It just means I didn't get to the right conclusion the right way. And so in this, all that I'm trying to say is that I think for somebody who's come from charismania and landed in John MacArthur's cessationism, one of the appeals to the charismatic with the seatbelt position, besides all of the scriptural arguments, besides all of the theological arguments, is the fact that when they land there, they'll have this journey behind them. And they'll be the person who, I tried both extremes. They didn't work for me. They didn't make sense. There were problems with all of them. And I had to come here. And that's rhetorically persuasive, not just to their hearer when they tell this story, but also to themselves. They can tell themselves, like, I did both and I tried both. And they were both wrong, and this is where it has to be.
Yeah. Is the problem perhaps categorizing and how you categorize the extremes? Like painting the extremes as extremes. Does that introduce kind of some problems in this?
I think painting the extremes as extremes is part of the fallacy. Like whether or not they actually are extreme, it doesn't really matter.
No, I was just thinking that I think part of the problem is when you categorize the extremes as extremes. Because some people in those extreme categories think that they're in full truth and might be. And I'm talking theologically here. I'm not talking political extremes. Wow, Jim just endorsed white supremacy. Wow, that's just episode 81. We finally got there. You know,
white supremacists might be right.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying, folks. But in terms of the charismatic and cessationist debate, it's a perspective thing. Who is extreme and who's in the middle? Whatever position you hold in, you know, good conscience and full faith, you think that is the right position. So I need to be careful what I say.
And I'm not trying to say that either of the positions is extreme. I mean, I'm personally of the opinion that charismania is really extreme. And I also think that John MacArthur is extreme. Like what's funny here is I'm not one of the two extreme positions. I'm not an anti-supernaturalist and I don't ribbon dance. Like I'm technically also in the middle.
I wish your position, honestly, was like promoted more because still to this day, like when I learned the day that I learned what David's position was on charismatic things, I shouldn't say that, but spiritual gifts, I almost didn't believe you. I'm like, are you sure, David? Are you sure did you hear what you just said? I don't get it. This is weird. I'd reject this. I reject you.
I reject what you think you say.
Yeah, I reject it. No, it's the language of extremes and middles might be kind of confusing things because we create, I guess, I don't know if this is right, but we create false dichotomies or we create dichotomies at the exclusion of all the other automies. And the example you brought up of your political views is a great one. That there's not just two views, there's three, there's four, there's five, there's six, there's seven, there's eight, there's nine. And they're not dictated. Where you go with that view is not dictated by the battle between Republican and Democrat. Because that's all we know. That's all we know right now is those two views. And they only allow us to think in terms of the terms that they dictate. And when I finally got that, I didn't think of the middle anymore because I'm not in the middle. I'm independent also like you, not in the same way. Well, I guess in the same way because I think there is a different view that transcends this silly little Republican and Democrat thing. But that is so much more useful. And it's not as it's not as rhetorically sexy, I guess, because it takes a while to kind of explain how you got there, and people usually don't like listen to you.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I know you know all about this, but when you're there, it feels so much better.
Yeah, I think that part of the fallacy is for the person being persuaded, identifying two extremes that they're going to not be a part of. So another example that might be an interesting perspective on this, like as a thought experiment for us, is theist versus atheist. Like, you can paint the whole, like, is there a God? You know, who made the universe? How did the universe come to be? What's our reason for being here, et cetera. You can paint that if you wanted, in terms of theist versus non-theist. And Jim and I obviously are both very strongly on the theist side. But there's a lot of appeal to, especially in today's day and age, where like we just kind of want to eschew history. There is a lot of appeal to finding the middle of the road position and finding something like Buddhism, where you don't believe in a God per se, but you also don't believe that this world is all there is. And you don't, like, there's an appeal there that we the people who are firmly on one side or the other, see as madness. We see it as complete silliness that somebody would not take one of the two options. Like, of course they should take ours. But like, Buddhism might even be stupider than atheism.
Yeah, I think you're getting at something that I've been reading a lot of Christopher Hitchens in my adult life, and he had absolute contempt, perhaps more contempt for the agnostic than the theist.
And that's another in the middle of the road position. Yeah.
Yeah. Take one of Christopher Hitchens' very best friends. His name was Martin Amis. He held the agnostic view. And while he was really good friends with Christopher Hitchens, Hitchens always kind of resented that position because he felt it was intellectually lazy, I guess. He thought there was evidence sufficient, or lack thereof, sufficient to come down on one or the other. And his world was only theist versus non-theist. And this middle category was probably very strange for him. He probably had an exceedingly lack of respect, for people who would willing to go there. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know if right now we're past the, do you remember, speaking of Christopher Hitchens, the Four Horsemen of Atheism, it was Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and Sam Harris. And those guys all published a series of books around the same time, and it was like militant atheism. Like, they were aggressively prosecuting theism, and they would say just such horrible things about people who believed or who were theist. And they were willing to take such hard stances against it, which made it kind of like almost legitimized atheism as a position and left no room for the middle. Now that that era is over, I think it's cool to be an agnostic again, but during their era, it kind of wasn't. But that's just kind of an anecdotal thing I just felt like mentioning because we were on Christopher Hitchens anyway. But I think right now it might be fashionable. It was fashionable to be a Buddhist for a while, but it wasn't because it was a position in the middle that saved them from the extremes. I think it was just kind of a fad. It was kind of faddish to be a Buddhist for a while. But yeah, I don't know if popular culture is there right now in terms of that debate. Maybe they are, but there is psychological appeal to agnosis because you don't have to really put much work into being agnostic. It's really easy. It's like there's not a lot of work into it at all because you don't have to pursue knowing.
Yeah, or to prove anything.
Yeah, you've basically labeled if there is a God as unknowable. So there's no real reason to actually try it. And I mean, there's just not, I think that's appeal too. And it's an appeal for people as well. The middle, it doesn't take a lot of work. It doesn't take a lot of work at all.
Yeah. I mean, you're not constantly dealing with the other side. And I guess that's what I mean by the two extremes. Like, extreme might be the wrong word, but it's the polar opposites in the debate. The sides that are the most opposed to each other. And in that sense, they're extreme, but they might not be extremist in the sense that they're blowing up mosques or cathedrals or synagogues.
Or synagogues. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, you know what we should do? This is a good conversation, but we need to start wrapping it up. So David, do you have any final thoughts on this discussion that I think is quite relevant to how we interact with each other?
I think what you said about it being cool is interesting, because I hadn't used that language yet, cool or fashionable, because one of the reasons that it's rhetorically persuasive, there's an appeal to taking the position that lets you be smug when you're debating.
Huh. Is the middle sometimes a position people use for smugness?
Well, that's kind of what I mean, is like, if you see the opposing sides as extreme and you're able to paint them as extremists, then like being the guy who holds the regulative principle, but like doesn't really, you know, he's okay with Christmas and is okay with Easter, and really it doesn't affect him at all, except like no fog machines. Like being that guy lets you, to anybody that you're talking to, kind of calm them down. Like, dude with the fog machine, like, chill, regulative principle. Dude who only sings psalms, like, you're being really like not cool right now. Like you're excluding all these things that are like really good. And like, it lets you hold that position of like peacemaker or like the smartest guy in the room in some sense. Not like smart because you're like really well read or, you know, have all the books, but smart because like, guys, this is common sense. Like, don't do the extreme this, don't do the extreme that. Like, just, you know, be.
That's interesting, David. Were I one of those people, I don't know if I would take exception to what you just said or not, but I'm just happy that I don't have to be mad at you right now.
Cause what the term that I'm looking for is like shaming. Like, people will shame me for my positions, and you can only really,
relative principle people who celebrate Christmas do this to you. Do they use you as like a way to just distract from?
No, the regulative principle is probably not a good example of this. But I, yeah, no, well, they'll get upset with us for binding people's consciences. Like, I have had that happen. I'm trying to think, I had a particular example in mind when I used the term shaming. Because, yeah, I don't really know. But when you're in the cool position, shaming might be the wrong word, but you get to use the same kind of manipulative, manipulations that you got to use in high school when you like told somebody that like, well, I'm really not that into Pokemon.
I don't know. I mean, I can see the shaming thing a little bit. I mean, it can be used as a rhetorical wedge. Or planting a flag in the sand. I could see that. But I think we should press pause in the conversation, because I don't know what to say anymore. And right. I can't follow you. I can't follow where you go. I cannot follow. You're Frodo going to Mount Doom, and Sam is like walking back to the Shire. That's me. I'm Sam. I'm walking back to the Shire, and I'm saying, so long, Frodo. Best of luck to you. So let's go ahead and end the show here. David is looking at me weirdly on Skype cam right now.
Did you watch Bill's version of the Lord of the Rings?
By the way, I mean, folks, I don't know if you've noticed, we've kind of mentioned it a little bit, but David has been writing the Bill skits lately, and I perform them. And I just kind of sit and go, what has happened? You know, this monster I have created is kind of, he's now in Lord of the Rings scenes. Who would have thought when we did Bill Hasinger's Palette Depot that we would be here now today doing skit after skit? He truly is a saga, Bill Hasinger, but he has his own Instagram channel now. I cannot believe this. Well, you know what? This is fun. I need to go to a small group, which means I have to go down a couple of beers. So let me go do that. I'm going to go to a small group. Have a good time. Thank you, David, for delayed laughing there. I don't actually do that, folks. It's whiskey that I down. The great show. We will chat.
Very thick fingers.
We'll probably continue on your list of fun little persuasive rhetorical devices that people use. Because it's been kind of interesting, I think. A little short show today, but that's good. And yeah, that's all I got. So, David, I hope you have fun over there in Colorado land. And yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it. That's all I got.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Won't someone save me from this podcast? Is it over or just dragging along? Will these two guys talk? Song. My back is sore from all this. adventure started off so tongue-in-cheek. Now it seems it's on.